You're listening to Marcus Sahaba Online Radio Podcast.
Yes, the program is after dinner, Mint. And yes, come here, Lucalo. There is your Mint. Yeah, and one for Ibrahim Badacha. And yes, this one is for... Hey, I believe you're still listening to us, Tobela. Hey, Tobela's enjoying it. What about Bilal? There's a Mint for you, too. And one for me. Yes, that time of the evening where we get into our segment called Travel Express. And Alhamdulillah, he is an astute businessman when it comes to traveling. He's traveled for many years. Our very own Ibrahim Badacha. Ibrahim, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, a beautiful Tuesday evening?
Walaikum salam, Brother Shafat and all the listeners of Makkah Sahaba. Alhamdulillah, I am well, as can be expected in the circumstances, and just holding thumbs and praying for everybody that's being affected by COVID. Inshallah, may Allah give them shifa.
Alhamdulillah, inshallah, Allah will definitely give them shifa, and after hardship cometh ease, and the ease will come soon. Yes, Ibrahim, we have quite a few topics to get through, and looking at tourism in Bali, the tourists in Bali are made to do up to 50 push-ups for not wearing face masks. Now, that's a novel idea. I don't know if you did karate. When I did karate when I was a lighty, if you made one mistake, and our, you know, the karate instructor made us do 50 push-ups. Hey, we used to suffer. But here we notice that tourists have to do push-ups. Your comments, Ibrahim?
Yeah, talking about karate, we used to do it on our thumbs if we were out of line, eh? But coming back to Bali, yeah, it has its own peculiarities and idiosyncrasies, as we can see. Basically, what it is that they found that mostly it's the male tourists that are coming to Bali, per se, who are the offenders, who are not quite wearing, say, either wearing a mask or not wearing them properly where they cover the nose and mouth. And the official fine is about 100,000 Indonesian rupees. That translates to about 110 rands if you fail to wear a mask, right? And I believe that if you are not in a position to pay the fine, then you've got to do 50 push-ups. And if your mask is not put on properly, then you get away with 15 push-ups if you cannot pay. That is the situation, and the police confirm that they're getting fed up with this and the fact that the tourists are not wearing masks, and they are even going to the extent of considering deportation if they don't get the situation under control. And there has been some footage doing it around on social media where they have these couples doing push-ups, so that's doing the round. And it is mandatory, by the way, to wear a face mask in public since August last year. And 90%, like I said, of the people caught ignoring the rules are foreign tourists. And of course, they've got novel excuses like I forgot it at the hotel, or the mask is wet or damaged or something. But the police are wise to it, and they are not listening to any stories. And you either pay or do the push-up for what it's worth. So that's the story there right now. And being tired of it, like I said, they are seriously threatening to start deporting foreigners who refuse to wear the mask. And just for some data, since the pandemic began, Indonesia has had over 950,000 cases and recorded 27,203 deaths. So that's the situation. On the other side, other hand, they've got about 1.2 million doses of Sinovac vaccine. I would think that's a Chinese brand, which will be given free to all citizens. That then is the situation in Bali right now, insofar as the push-up story goes, Brother Shafat.
You know, you're very eloquent indeed. I like the way you deliver it, Ibrahim. Like a cool ride on an Airbus. Hey, with Ibrahim there, the tour the guide. You can imagine how lovely he explains that. And Ibrahim, you're looking at Durban, you know, there's an apathy. I mean, you notice that so many people not wearing masks. The police are just sitting in the vans and enjoying the Kentucky chicken or whatever they have, even Nando's and all that. But, you know, people are making the observation that, you know, the mask regulation or the mask is not being adhered to. Perhaps we need to implement the push-ups in the Durban beachfront. So what's your take on that, Ibrahim?
Well, look, that's a good idea in a sense. Either fight them or make them do push-ups. One way or the other, you're going to get their attention, I would think.
I think you should make that of the, you know, maybe because you're part of the group, and you can say, you know what, I've got a suggestion here. You know, people climb up on the money, let them do push-ups, you know, let's see how they do it. It'll be fun, and we'll see what
happens there. But then they'll tell us we are against men folk as such, you know, because we're not going to get the women folk to start down and doing push-ups.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. Point taken, Ibrahim. And we're looking at the Airbus. They confirm, you know, further aircraft production cuts. So what's happening with the Airbus?
Well, as you know, the thing is the airline industry per se is in the doldrums right now, and it's just getting worse by the day. And I can understand the fact that Airbus is cutting back on their production quotas, simply because there are no takers for the finished product. I know Boeing, I think, is in a worse of situation, having had that debacle with the 737 MAX, where airlines are absolutely refusing to take them back, even after they've done their software and other sort of patches and upgrades. So, yeah, that is the situation in the airline industry, where people are making do with the existing fleet and equipment that they've got, and nobody is spending money unnecessarily in these tight and tough times buying new aircraft. Just to go into the Airbus issue, they have updated production rate plans for the very popular A320 family of aircraft in response to the continued slowdown, because I think that's the bestseller really in the range insofar as volume sales and overall profitability goes. And the new production rates will lead to a gradual increase in production from the current 40 aircraft per month to 43 in quarter three and right up to 45 in the fourth quarter of this year. And this latest production plan represents a slower ramp up than what was obviously the benchmark, was anything between 47 to 50 of these aircraft per month. So you can see they're already cutting back. The A220 monthly production rate will increase from 4 to 5 aircraft per month from the end of first quarter, as previously foreseen. And the wide-body production is expected to remain stable at current levels, because these are mostly for the international routes. And the monthly production rates of around 5 for the A350 and 2 for the A330 respectively, or what is coming out of there. And this decision postpones the potential rate increase of for the A350 to a later stage, because the A350 is the latest release of the family of aircraft. And they're monitoring, of course, the situation and the market trends very closely. And I guess they will revise the rate as and when the situation warrants it. But right now they are being very, very prudent and conservative with the forecast. And I guess the name of the game is survival right now. Shafat, and they more than anyone else know what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely, Ibrahim. As you said, the survival is paramount in the minds of all these, you know, travel agents. So even in your case, a bit of a rough time. But inshallah, as I said, after hardship, peace will come. What's the best aircraft you flew in, Ibrahim? You know, you've been so many years in this game of traveling. What was the best aircraft you've flown in?
To be quite honest, if you talk about commercial airlines, well, I think the A380 is right up there with them. And I'm talking about the front cabins, whether it's business class. Well, on the A380, the entire top deck is business class. It has complete business class service, including a lounge and a sort of a so-called bar area where you can go and sit and chat and have your soft drinks or whatever suits your fancy over there. So I'll put the A380 right up there, followed by maybe the 777. Yeah, that's a workhorse of note. And of late, 787, the Dreamliner, Boeing Dreamliner is coming, but that had some teething trouble with the fire of the wiring looms in the wings and things like that, and the overhead compartment. But they have since sorted that matter out, and it is beginning to prove itself and be widely accepted by the traveling public, and more importantly, by the airlines that buy those aircraft.
Yeah, interesting indeed, the Ibrahim. And we look at a global tourism resilience center opens a new location in Kenya. What is this all about, Ibrahim?
Yeah, just before we go off the topic of the Airbus on to the next one, what concerns me is Airbus says that they are only expecting the aircraft market to return to pre-COVID-19 levels by as late as between 2023 and 2025. So it's anybody's guess how long this nonsense is going to be with us.
Yeah.
Coming to this Global Tourism Resilience Center that recently opened in Kenya, this initially is it's got a long name. It's called the Global Tourism Resilience and Crisis Management Center. It was originally mooted by a gentleman called Edmund Bartlett from, of all places, the Caribbean in the West Indies. And it was established in 2017 and housed at the University of the West Indies. And its mission is to assist global tourism destinations with destination preparedness, management, and recovery from disruptions and or crises. Now, I've done some research on the center that they've just opened. And while they are long on telling you all sorts of things about what it does, they don't actually give you much information as to what the interventions are per se. They tell you all the things that they, like I just said, that they want to help. The destination to be prepared to recover from disruption. But I don't think they bargained on anything of the sort like we are experiencing with COVID. But be that as it may, they say the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So let's see what, if anything special, they are going to come up with. Because they claim to have representative offices in the Caribbean, in Africa, and in the Mediterranean region, with affiliates in over 42 countries globally. This new branch that was opened just recently, excuse me, is situated in the Jomo Kenyatta University in Kenya, and it's a satellite office, of course, to give them, to extend their footprint and give them a global reach. And the fact that it is just starting up, it's going to be covering most of East Africa, and they're looking at Kenya because of the huge role that tourism plays insofar as the percentage of GDP generated insofar as the economy of Kenya goes, and that is why they chose Kenya for the East African region per se, and they are hoping that with the intervention that Kenya will be in a better position to bounce back more quickly and responsibly after this disruptive event. But having said that, nobody bargained on COVID-19, and I don't think anyone in their wildest imagination would have thought that there's going to be lockdowns that are sort of being extended every time it's due to expire, they keep extending it for another month and another month and so on and so forth. So I'm beginning to think that we'll be in February before long, and I fear that this is going to be very much a redux of what we had last year. So time will tell, of course, and let's see until the next wave that they choose to release comes about. I guess we just got to hang on to our hats.
Absolutely, Ibrahim, and you know, sabr is important now, positive sabr and jameel, and you know, also looking at, now I was thinking aloud whilst you're talking about travel, I mean, about the Airbus and the aircraft. I mean, who decides what are the quotas for certain countries? You can have so many aeroplanes, you can buy so many. Is it decided by America in cahoots with who? Who runs this, you know, the decision making of the quotas given to certain countries for so many fleets they can have, or things like that, Ibrahim?
To be quite honest, Shafat, I don't believe that there is any body that regulates who gets how many aircraft. I think it's up to the individual carrier, in the sense, I mean, in the airline per se, and how deep their pockets are, and what kind of network expansion they plan to embark on in the short, middle, or long term, what routes they are planning to embark on and things like that, that will determine what the order book is going to look like. And you most probably know that they have their annual air show every year where they show off their planes and the rest of it. And this is where the prospective buyers who are charged with the task of buying forward, because, you know, it takes quite some time to assemble an aircraft for your configuration and your color scheme and internal preference, seat layout and materials and all this, all sorts of things. So you've got to be ordering at least 3 to 5 years in advance if you stand a chance of getting delivery of your aircraft when you envisage that you are in a position and ready and have your stations, when I say stations, meaning your new operation stations in order and manned and ready to go when you get your aircraft. So that is purely a choice of the airline. And of course, the manufacturers like Airbus, Bombardier to a lesser extent, and Boeing is the major player. They are the ones that get their order books filled in advance, and of course, that they work through that order book in order of first come, first serve. And you've got the money, they've got the time, and that's how it works.
Yes, Ibrahim, time for us to get talking grassroots levels, you know, to those that are naive. And if someone came up to you and said, Ibrahim, you know, mashallah, you've been in the travel agents for so long. I want to know from you, Ibrahim, this naive person will ask you, what does a travel agent do? How would you answer them?
Well, basically our business, depending if you are in a corporate or leisure, well, let's just say if you are in a leisure industry, then I think you are there to plan the prospective customer's journey. I think that is your main function. And the reason why travel agents are still in existence is because they offer a degree and a range of services that cannot be had by, you know, from an online portal or go on to booking.com or whoever you may. Yes, you may get the ability to search a million different rooms and destinations at the click of a mouse, but that personal touch is what matters. And in our cases, where we've got over 40 years of personal experience traveling to and from destinations, going through airports, through immigration checks, having good, bad, or ugly experiences along the way, whether it's a crooked taxi driver or whatever the case may be, or a snot-nosed official that's giving you a hard time because they don't like your face or will cut off your passport. These are the things that we bring to the table that is invaluable to a first-time or a novice who's traveling and needs to know everything from the time he actually leave his house, going to the airport, what to expect at check-in, what the procedures are, what his documentation should be like, and to make sure that you give him the best deal available and value for money, because personally, our standard of operation is that if we are not prepared to stay in a particular hotel or type of accommodation or resort, then we don't expect our clients who are going to be paying good money to go and stay there and be happy with us. So this is something that we can say, because I'm sure if you've been on the internet, everything looks all beautiful, you know, the swimming pool, the suites and the hotel room. But when you go there in reality, it's something totally different. And this is where the personal experience and the years of traveling to different destinations comes into play, where you can keep them up to date with the latest in tourism infrastructure, which is the best season to go there, and where they should go and eat, and especially with our people if they're looking for halal food and stuff like that. So this is what our role is, to make sure that we give them value-added service along the way, not just at the time of construction, but after he departs, during his journey, and after he's come back from it. And I think anyone that is worth their salt in the industry will know that it's the after-sale service that matters more than anything else, because ultimately if they have any glitches, and the fact that we rely on so many different individuals and companies to supply services, and if anyone screws up along the way, that's your reputation on the line, and you'd better be there and be able to handle that thing as swiftly and efficiently as possible. Because if they're going good, then everyone's happy. But it's when the problems start. And God forbid, if you're booked online, I don't know who you're going to talk to. You might get a call center and talk to a computer, maybe. I don't know whether you get a live human on the other side that knows what he's doing, or if he's sitting in Singapore or Dubai or God only knows where, whether he's going to be particularly interested at that time of the night or morning, depending on where the trouble is. If you miss the transfer, things like that, then you've got an issue. But with us, we've got emergency call numbers and things like that. So this is something that we give them, is that peace of mind and reassurance that any competent, professional and experienced travel agent will provide.
Yes, Ibrahim, you know, listening to you, you notice that your job is, or the travel agency, you know, the job is pretty demanding. You know, you have to be on call 24/7, you know. What's a stressful factor like, you know, travel agents experience stress from all corners? I mean, you're talking about accommodating people, especially during COVID-19. You know, perhaps are there any disadvantages of being a travel agency during this time, Ibrahim?
Yeah, the main disadvantage is that there is no business, so to speak. So keeping an operation running, and that's the challenge. So any prospective customer, again, be it corporate or leisure, you're going to have to walk another 2 miles, not just the extra mile, to make sure that you convince him that you are the right people to deal with in this time with all the restrictions, and that you had better know your facts backwards insofar as which destinations are still allowing people to come in from South Africa, whether you are going to be in quarantine at your transit point or destination, and for how long, what the cost of a COVID test might be, whether you are going to have to foot the bill for your accommodation there. And like we recently had, because of the second, so-called second wave that hit us here in South Africa, I'm not sure if you kept abreast of it, but Emirates has suspended all flights to and from South Africa. And they were supposed to have come back online. I think it was, what's today, Tuesday? On Thursday, they were supposed to come online. But they just released another communique extending that no-fly period right up to the 4th of February. So, again, it behooves the travel agency or the travel consultant or advisor who's handling the customer. You know, we have what we call a duty of care. And if we know that the situation is dodgy, then it's not ethical for us to sell a seat or a tours package, tour package to any particular destination, knowing beforehand that there is a situation potentially that could impact negatively on the potential traveler. So all the things come into play, and the only way one can be on top of the game and not run into any trouble or cause the customer any distress that could get a rather expensive and lead to all sorts of problems and possible litigation later on, is to know what you are selling, know your destinations that are available. And I think just the other day when Joe Biden is coming now, they've stopped the flights from South Africa. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. And so has the Netherlands. So yes. more and more, for these passing days, number of destinations, international destinations that we can go to is dwindling seriously. And it's just a question of time before, you know, it's reached a point of no return where you say, listen, it's not making any sense financially. It's no longer viable even to keep a handful of staff, you know, whether they're working from home or whether they're still coming to the office. And it's very, very serious. It's a very challenging time that has hitherto been unforeseen and has never been experienced in history.
I tell you, Brian, sitting in the business class with you this evening, really enjoying the conversation, but the time is running out now. We are about to land. Your parting words before I let you go?
All I can say is that we are doing our best to make sure that we keep the operations running as such, because we've got such loyal customers for so many years, and they keep phoning us hoping that we're going to give them some good news. A lot of our people basically still wanting to go to Umrah and stuff like that, and with Ramadan just a few short weeks down the road, I think it is starting already. So all I can do is, like the rest of them, hope and pray that things improve. And my heartfelt prayers go out to everybody that's having, say, either close or extended family members who are suffering from COVID. I pray for their recovery. And also I extend my condolences to those who have lost a loved one in the recent past. Those are my thoughts right now, and I just hope and pray that everything works out well for everybody, inshallah.
Inshallah, Ibrahim, absolutely, mashallah, this evening. Really enjoy your company on Travel Express. Inshallah, talk to you next week this time. Have a mashallah evening ahead. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Jazakallah khair, Brother Shafat, and wa alaikum salam to you and to all our listeners.
JazakAllah khair. Yes, Ibrahim Abadacha there, alhamdulillah, keeping us up to speed. Well, Lucalo, thank you very much for doing a brilliant piece of engineering, and alhamdulillah, keep it locked on to Markaz Sahaba for beautiful programming and educational programming. From the team and I, till we meet you again, we bid you, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.